Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Pete Musto, Bruce Alpert, Katie Weaver, and John Russell. Later, Olivia Leo and Mario Ritter will bring us this week's education report. But first, Turkey has historically prided itself on being a secular state. Amendments to the Constitution during the 1920s and 1930s separated religion and government policy. Since that time, debates about the role of religion in public life have continued in the Muslim-majority country. In a recent decision, the government banned the teaching of evolution in high school. This action means that Turkish students entering high school will no longer learn about the theory of evolution. The theory comes from the work of Charles Darwin, the famed British naturalist. His ideas are considered to be the basis for the scientific study of life on Earth. The government said its decision was not about teaching Islam. Instead, officials said high school students don't have the necessary scientific background and information-based context to understand the theory of evolution. Apaslan Dermuş is the head of the Education Ministry's Curriculum Board. Dermuş said members of the board thought the theory should be taught to higher-level students. We tried to leave out some of the controversial issues from our students' agenda, Dermuş added. Critics of the decision say that Turkish children will not get the education they need. Scholar Alatin Dinger told VOA, "The Turkish education system is very weak concerning the fundamental sciences, both in domestic and international exams, be it math, physics, chemistry, and biology. Our students have very low passing grade percentages. It is actually terribly low." Dinger added that the next generation of Turkish students should learn about evolution and Darwin. If you raise them without learning those subjects, how can you argue that we are a scientifically enlightened country that can produce the scientist of the future? Dinger added. This week, Turkey's main teachers' union, Eğitim Sen, said it was taking the issue to court. Mehmet Balık is the chairperson of Eğitim Sen. He criticized the decision to ban the teaching of evolution and a new policy that requires schools to have a prayer room. These actions destroy the principle of secularism and the scientific principles of education, he said. Other critics say the government's ban on teaching evolution is part of a plan by President Erdogan to push an Islamic identity onto Turkish society. Similar debates about the teaching of evolution have taken place in other countries, including the United States. In the late 1990s, the state of Kansas famously banned the teaching of evolution in public schools. The school board reversed its decision in early 2001 amid public criticism. In the mid-2000s, at least 16 U.S. states were considering changes to the teaching of evolution in schools. Although critics say religion and science are at odds, some Islamic theologians say evolution and Islam can exist together quite easily. İhsan Elçik is a Muslim theologian. He told VOA If evolution is scientific truth that exists in nature, nobody can stand against it. Besides, by my religious faith, scientific truth means religious truth. The two are not contradictory.
North Korea said it successfully launched an intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM, on Tuesday. The North Korean government considers the launch an important step in developing its nuclear weapons and missile programs. The government continues to test missiles, although there have been repeated warnings from other countries. The North Korean military launched the missile from an airport near its border with China. It landed in the sea in an area claimed by Japan as its special economic zone. The launch shocked the Japanese government. It raised questions about China's ability to influence North Korea. North Korea claims the missile can hit anywhere in the world. The launch puts pressure on the Chinese government to put stronger sanctions on North Korea. But how China will answer is still unclear. China's foreign ministry representative, Geng Shuang, spoke at a press conference Tuesday. He said China has made many efforts to solve the problems on the Korean Peninsula. He added that China plays an important part in the relations between North Korea and other Asian nations. He also asked all parties involved to use restraint to solve the dispute quickly. Geng said China urges North Korea not to violate UN Security Council resolutions. He asks the country to create necessary conditions for resuming dialogue and negotiations. United States President Donald Trump has been trying to get China to do more to end North Korea's nuclear weapons program. But late last month, Trump said that while he greatly appreciated China's help, it has not worked out. He added, "At least I know China tried." On Tuesday, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said the latest missile test shows that the threat from North Korea has increased. Later this week, the U.S., South Korea, and Japan will hold a meeting while the leaders of those countries attend the Group of 20 summit in Hamburg, Germany. After the missile launch on Tuesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin said he would work with Chinese President Xi Jinping to halt North Korea's weapons program. Putin proposed a plan in which North Korea freezes its nuclear program while the United States and South Korea freeze their large joint military exercises. Cheng Xiaohe is a political science professor at Beijing's Renmin University. He said it is unclear whether the United Nations will answer by only condemning the launch or by starting new sanctions. Cheng said if new sanctions are put in place, it could include a ban on tourism to North Korea and North Korean-produced petrochemical products. All of these are possible actions the Security Council could discuss, he said. Cheng noted that more research about the launch is needed. During the test, the missile climbed 2,800 kilometers before crashing into the sea. David Wright is a physicist and co-director of the Union of Concerned Scientists. He wrote on a website that if reports are correct, the same missile could fly as far as about 6,700 kilometers on a normal flight path. He said the missile could not reach the lower 48 states or the large islands of Hawaii. However, he said it could reach Alaska. I'm Pete Musto.
Long before he became vice president, Mike Pence told a reporter that he does not eat alone with any woman who is not his wife. A new poll shows that many men and women share the same concerns as Pence about private meetings or meals with members of the opposite sex. The poll was done for the New York Times by the research group Morning Consult. It found that nearly two-thirds of people believe extra care should be taken with members of the opposite sex at work. It also found a majority of women and nearly half of men believe it is unacceptable to have dinner or drinks with anyone of the opposite sex who is not their spouse. But it also found that majorities of people believe it is acceptable to have a private meeting at work with a member of the opposite sex. Women who are concerned about having dinner or other meetings with employees of the opposite sex worry about sexual harassment, the New York Times reported. Male supervisors worry that people might see private meetings with women employees as sexual harassment. Pence was a member of Congress when he told the Hill newspaper in 2002 that he did not go out to meals with a woman unless his wife was present. He went on to serve as governor of Indiana before being elected vice president with fellow Republican Donald Trump in last November's election. Terry Boyer is executive director of the Center for Women and Work at the Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations. She said concerns about private meetings with members of the opposite sex work to the disadvantage of women. That is because a majority of management positions are held by men, meaning women employees would seem to have fewer chances to meet with the boss than male employees. Boyer also said the fact that male bosses are worried about having private meetings with female employees shows they may think of them first as women ahead of their individual qualities. That in itself can limit opportunities for women employees, she said. Boyer said the findings of the new poll are somewhat surprising and somewhat not surprising. There should be more of an understanding by now that workplace equality is important, Boyer said. On the other hand, she said, it should not come as a total surprise because experts have been discussing how many people are uncomfortable meeting with members of the opposite sex for some time. She notes that a glass ceiling study in the 1990s found that a lack of meetings between male bosses and female employees limits opportunities for women. A glass ceiling means fewer chances to rise to top positions within a company or government by women and minorities. A 2016 report by the U.S. Labor Department found that women hold about 40% of the 17 million management positions in the United States. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Researchers are hoping to bring technology to small farms in developing countries. Ranveer Chandra works for Microsoft Corporation, the American technology company. Chandra grew up in India. He remembers spending 4 months a year on his family's farm. There was no water, he said. No electricity, no toilets. Animals pulled plowing equipment through fields, as they have for centuries. Now, Chandra, like many other researchers, wants to bring technology to small farms. Their goal is this: to feed the world without destroying the planet.
Precision agriculture is a method of growing crops. Farmers use technology to collect very precise or exact measurements about their land. It tells farmers how they planted seeds, used fertilizers and chemical pesticides, and so on. The main idea of precision farming, notes the Crop Society of America, or CSA, is that there are natural differences in the soil, even in the same field. Farmers who understand these differences are better able to produce crops. Precision farming is fairly new in the United States, says the CSA. It began in the 1990s. At that time, global positioning system, or GPS technology, became available to the public. GPS technology is able to show exact positions on Earth. GPS information can tell farmers where they planted seeds, used fertilizers, chemical pesticides, and so on.
In many areas, farmers do not use high-tech equipment. Often in those places, production levels are low. Now, high-tech tools are bringing a new level of precision to large-scale agriculture. Farm equipment can plant different amounts of seeds and leave different amounts of fertilizer in different parts of a field. Water measuring equipment can tell farmers how much water their plants are getting. Some of this technology is too costly for small farmers, especially in developing countries.
Ranveer Chandra, the Microsoft researcher from India, is working to develop low-cost, high-tech tools for farmers. Chandra developed a system that connects soil sensors to other sensing equipment through unused television or TV channels. These unused TV signals, known as white space frequencies, can provide broadband internet connection over long distances. Some hospitals and schools in rural areas are already online with white space connections, Chandra noted. Each soil sensor provides information about conditions on the farm. To connect all the areas into a big picture, a drone aircraft takes photographs from high in the air. Artificial intelligence, or AI, compares these aerial photos to the sensor data. AI then can create maps of where the soil is too acidic or needs more water. Similar technology can also help farmers watch their animals. Webcams can help farmers identify sick cattle, for example.
Chandra hopes to bring the cost of a simple system under $100. He notes the existence of low-cost replacements for the drones. A balloon tied to a mobile phone can serve the same purpose. He added that Microsoft is considering different business models. Farmers could share a system, or a local farm business could rent systems to farmers. Microsoft is just one company that sees agriculture as an area of growth for technology. Google invested in a small company that gathers farmers' data on how different crops perform from farm to farm and year to year. Many other companies are trying to enter the high-tech farm business, notes John Fulton of Ohio State University. Fulton himself has helped develop a free phone app for farmers. The software program helps them compare different field management techniques. Everyone's trying to figure out how they play in agriculture, he said. We're really at an early stage of this digital agriculture revolution.
Demands on agriculture are increasing. As the world's population grows, farmers will need to make more food without cutting down more forests or polluting the land and water. To do that, existing farms need to produce more crops. Chandra says that what farmers need is more information so they can give the land what it needs. Like, apply water only where it is needed, he said. Apply fertilizer only where it is needed. Apply pesticide only where it's needed. However, the level and speed at which new farming techniques and technologies will spread remains unclear. Bruce Erickson is a precision farming expert at Purdue University in Indiana. He told the CSA that one problem faced by any new farming technology is getting people to use it with their existing methods. Different countries have different farming methods and different ways of doing business. It takes people to implement new farming practices, Erickson said. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
A majority of Americans say they would change their choice of college, degree, or field of study if they could do it over again. Gallup, an American research-based company, and the Strata Education Network reported in June that 51% of Americans regret one of their college education choices. The study also found that 36% of Americans said they would change their major if they could. 28% of Americans said they would choose a different college or university, and 12% said they would choose a different degree program.
Precious A. Smith is the deputy director for the Center for Academic Excellence at Howard University. Smith does not want people to think that 51% of American college graduates are unhappy with what they are currently doing. She says the students might have just made different choices if they had different information at the time they were picking a major or picking an institution to graduate from. Students often end up choosing between a career that will make them happy and a career that will make a lot of money, she says. Many students, therefore, end up picking a major that they are not very satisfied with.
Beth Davis is a graduate of the University of Maryland. She says, "I went to college because everybody else was going to college." Davis says her degree in history and English has nothing to do with her current job. She never took a business class in college, but she now runs a successful construction business. She believes that on-the-job training may be a better option for many people. "The things that I am interested in, I always would have learned about anyway. I didn't need a college degree to do that," she says.
The poll found that there were two groups of students that were more satisfied with their educational decisions. One included students who completed trade, technical, or work-related study programs. And the other included students who specialized in science, technology, engineering, or mathematics, an area known in American education as STEM. The poll also found that individuals with higher student loan debt are more likely to say they would change at least one educational decision.
Smith of Howard University says that some former students probably didn't realize how much that loan debt was going to affect their current lifestyle. She advises students to be flexible with their career goals. She says students need to understand that your career goal at the end of high school and your career goal at the end of college are going to look a little bit different.
Ashley Riley is a developmental specialist at Early Intervention, a service that works with children who have developmental delays. Riley wishes that she had more information about other majors and career options when she attended college. Riley said it was her current job at Early Intervention that, in her words, "opened my eyes up to all of these other majors that I have never really been exposed to in my college career." If she could go back to college again, Riley said she would have majored in occupational therapy or speech therapy instead of education and psychology.
The poll also showed that a person's desire to change their educational decisions is related to the kind of college or university they attended. About half of students at public or state universities which receive government money would change at least one of their educational decisions. The number is higher for private and for-profit schools.
The research was part of a 3-year study to help colleges and students complete education with a purpose. The researchers collected information from June 29, 2016 through March 26, 2017. They spoke by telephone with over 89,000 people throughout the United States, including the District of Columbia. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Olivia Leo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.